So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation for a report documenting the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on Wisconsin's economy. They wanted that report by June 30. They got that report by June 30. It's 155 pages long, so it's a perfect time for a Newsmakers with Missy Hughes, CEO of the WEDC, to talk about that report. Missy, welcome back to Wisconsin Eye.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, I got to admit, that was a tough report for me to read, but it's very, very important. So, number one, talk about why the report was needed, what surprised you about it, and then we'll walk through it, please.
Well, the report was requested in the April legislation that the governor and the legislature passed with regard to COVID. And in that legislation, they asked WEDC to prepare a report about the impact of COVID-19 on Wisconsin's economy and some of Wisconsin's major industries. I think what surprised me most about the report was the breadth of the impact. This isn't a tornado that touched down in a small town in central Wisconsin and we go in and work on that disaster. This is a natural disaster that's hit the whole state, the whole country. And so the complexity of what we saw, how, you know, every person in Wisconsin has been impacted, every community, every business, and trying to tie all those pieces together was a real challenge, and that's 155 pages.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it was tough for me to read. We both love Wisconsin. Would it be fair to say that COVID has decimated our economy, or is that too strong? Another word that comes to mind is carnage. Where are you on those two very loaded terms?
Well, you know, it's tough. Let me give you an example of a small business conversation I have. This went wrong, this went wrong, this went wrong, but we're going to be okay. The Wisconsin businesses are, you know, they're so enduring, and, you know, it's a cold winter, it's a bad crop season. Every Wisconsinite has the ability to kind of persevere through. But, you know, when you hear what businesses have endured, how they've changed, how they've pivoted, it gives you hope, but also, you know, still concern how much more can they take.
Well, I was surprised to see this number very early in the report. $13.7 billion, largely in federal aid, has come to Wisconsin in COVID-19. I'm not very good at math, but that's, it seems to me, about $236 per capita. But you say in the report, let me quote it, fully recovering from the effects of the pandemic has fully recovering from the effect the pandemic has had on the state's fiscal resources requires additional aid from the federal government. So what should the next round of federal aid for Wisconsin, who should it target?
Well, keep in mind that we have still, you know, in 7 days, we're going to have income taxes due, and we're going to understand the impact on the state budget after that. You know, so we're still working with some unknowns, but we know that there's going to be a devastating impact on the state government funds, which then trickles down to our schools and our communities. So that's the reason for continuing to need to talk about federal aid, that we still are yet to understand the full impacts of the gaps in our revenue and where we're going to need to fill those gaps, but we know they're going to be there. So when we talk about, you know, where that federal aid is going to become critical, it is in those support systems, the municipalities, the local governments, our school systems, our UW system are still going to be incredibly impacted by this loss of revenue. And that's where we need to continue to have conversations about federal aid. The other thing that I'm really concerned about is on July 25th, the unemployment benefits are going to run out for a lot of our citizens. And so, you know, what impact is that going to have when they need to go back and find that job at the restaurant or the hotel and, you know, that job's not there?
Now, are you referring to the additional $600 per week?
Yeah.
That was part of COVID? Okay.
Yeah.
So you're worried when that ends, and I think it's scheduled to end at the end of this month, what those families who have been receiving it and have been helped by that $600 a week, Where do they turn next when that's no longer available?
Exactly.
Okay, exactly. So do you think the $600 per week should be extended by Congress to buy us more time to recover?
You know, I wish that we were in a position where we could be having a more thoughtful conversation about this and thinking about, you know, that $600 that incentivizes some folks to stay home because their regular job that they had before this isn't a family-sustaining job. It also makes it a challenge for businesses to get workers back in. So if you're a restaurant and you're looking for employees and they're able to get that extra $600, what we need to have is a functioning government at our federal and state level where we can have thoughtful conversations about what we're trying to achieve and then work towards achieving that. Instead, you know, we are kind of zigging and zagging from crisis to crisis. And as a result, our policy decisions are made, you know, quick, they're political, and they maybe don't have as much thought behind them as we need them to have in this time.
The June 30 deadline, in hindsight, was that premature? Because let me quote from the report again. Today, COVID-19 continues to spread throughout the state, the nation, and the globe. Yesterday, Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm said we have a surge. So do you think this report is premature because none of us know how long COVID is going to be racking and hurting the Wisconsin economy?
I think in the middle of April, we thought we'd at least be in a summer lull of this virus and the spread of the virus, and we'd have some, you know, ability to reflect and see what the impact is like. I don't think anybody expected us to be, as Secretary Palm has described, you know, in another surge at this moment. I think it was a great opportunity to pause and put a stake in the ground and say, this is what we've learned 4 months into it. And we're going to continue to learn and we're going to continue to evolve. And you know, but I think the priorities that we set out will endure. There might be other priorities that arise. You know, we might have some shuffling, but at least it's a starting place for a conversation. So I think it was a great idea to ask for the report. I think the way that we approached it really systematically and looking at the whole state was effective, if I say so myself. But, you know, I think it's a starting point for a conversation, but I really hope, and I appreciate your having me here to talk about it, I hope it is that opportunity to have a conversation on a statewide basis about what our priorities are.
Reading between the lines of this report, are you warning Wisconsin that the COVID-19 effects on the economy could go for up to 2 years, Missy?
I hope it's pretty obvious that that's what we're saying. I mean, I think that the impacts of this are going to be continuing to evolve. We're hearing, you know, of manufacturers who are concerned about third and fourth quarter orders. We're hearing about construction that's concerned about what's the impact for next summer's construction season. So I think that we're going to continue to see a faltering economy if we don't get a hold of it now and think of, you know, okay, we need to do the first and foremost thing. We need to stop the spread of the virus. We need to do social distancing. We need to wear masks. Stop it in its tracks and then talk about, okay, how do we recover? And what are the steps we need to be taking? What are the priorities we need to be thinking about?
Okay, it's time to look at the three recommendations in the report. We're going to show them on a graphic. I'm going to ask you about each of them. Number one, get everyone back to work. I'm just going to read two sentences. Many service sector jobs, particularly in retail and restaurants, are not likely to return. It will be crucial to reskill and train people who lost their jobs. Last sentence, the pandemic has reinforced access to high-quality childcare, early childhood education, and healthcare as essential to the economy. So talk to me just about the first recommendation, get everyone back to work, please.
Well, so what I've learned during this education process of the 4 months of COVID-19 is this is a different kind of a slowdown, a different kind of an impact to the economy than what you would normally see in a recession. In a recession, you normally see that kind of mid-level worker, the manufacturing worker, the factory worker lose their job. This is particularly hitting the service sector, and that's not where we normally see the impact of a slowdown. And so as the service sector is losing their jobs and those jobs are going away, we're not going to have a place for them to come back to. And so we need to be thinking about how do we assist those service workers in getting the skills that they need to move into those kind of middle level jobs, those family sustaining jobs. where a lot of our industry in Wisconsin are still looking for employees. Steve, if you remember back in March, way long ago, we had 3% unemployment and our manufacturers were desperate for workers. We were spending money trying to attract workers from out of state to move here. Now we have this workers and our manufacturers, our industry are still looking for employees. Let's marry them together. And, you know, we might have an opportunity to really solve an enduring problem that we've had in Wisconsin, which is a shortage of a workforce. Let's think about how we can creatively maybe solve a problem.
Okay, let's look at recommendation number two, fix broadband. The pandemic has highlighted the digital divide in our state. Education, e-commerce, remote working, and even contact with government depend on access to computers and high-speed internet. Let's use your own example. You're in Vernon County. How reliable is broadband in Vernon County?
It is not reliable. I'm fortunate enough to be able to have access at my house, but it is not cheap. It is not affordable, and you know, it's not always reliable. So talking with you, or as you know, we've talked about doing online education that my kids are needing to do, or looking for a job is a real challenge when you have spotty internet or none at all. And this is a fixable problem. What I heard a lot before the crisis was, yeah, we've been trying to get broadband taken care of for years and years. Well, let's just knuckle down and come up with the right solutions. It's an infrastructure problem. We know how to fix infrastructure. We can do that here in Wisconsin, but we just need to put our minds to it. And that's why prioritizing and focusing on things rather than trying to do everything in this moment, I think is really critical. And fixing broadband is not, as we say in the report, a moonshot. It is something that we can do in Wisconsin. We can do it right away. We need to. School is starting here in a couple months, and there's going to be an online component to it. We need to make sure that all of our students in Wisconsin have access to broadband. And then, you know, then we have the challenge of making sure they have access to the computers and the tablets. So, you know, we got to get after this, and we got to start working on it.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I read in the report that the current state budget authorized an additional $48 million for broadband. And PSC has already awarded the first 24, and they're in the process of awarding the next $24 million, correct?
That's right.
Yep. Okay. Now, how would you...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. My question was, would you consider that only in incremental progress or major and significant progress addressing recommendation number two, Missy?
I think it's incremental progress. It is, I think, done in the past with a mindset that somehow having broadband is a luxury, that it is something we can do, you know, in a slow manner because, you know, you can go to the local McDonald's and sit in the parking lot and have Wi-Fi if you really need that, if you want to watch Netflix. But this isn't about watching Netflix. This is about being employed or getting educated. And so we need to be thinking about making sure that we don't leave gaps. Right now, we have a gap of about 5% of our students in Wisconsin have no access to broadband.
No access.
It's 50,000 people. According to the PSC, that can be fixed with about $8 million. So this is fixable. It is not insurmountable. And we need to, you know, just dive in, look for creative solutions. I've heard of some really innovative different types of infrastructure. We tend to look at this as, well, it's just like the rural electrification project. That was a huge project. We're already 80% in. Let's just finish that last 20%, but there's some inertia that has happened that we need to overcome.
Okay, third recommendation, support innovation. Innovation fuels job growth as well as flexibility and resiliency in our businesses. In a time of constrained resources and risk aversion, Wisconsin has a chance to use its innovative entrepreneurial spirit to launch its recovery. Just a couple PSs. You have some personal examples here of companies who've innovated. I want to refer to Pendel Global Precision in New Berlin, which over a period of weeks pivoted from what they had been making to making ventilator components. So, yeah, although I said this 155-page report is a tough read, there are some real examples of how some companies have innovated and stayed flexible. So talk to me about the third recommendation in innovation.
Well, I know you're not supposed to have a favorite child, but this is my favorite priority. I think it's the one that really has the most opportunity. So, you know, we're facing this incredible challenge, and I like to be optimistic and think about what do we do in the face of such a challenge. Wisconsin has a history of innovation that, you know, propels all of society forward, whether it is something like four-wheel drive at Oshkosh Truck, or work at Rockwell or Johnson Controls. You know, these big iconic companies all started with innovation and inventions by their founders. And so as we're thinking about how do we take that kind of DNA, you know, that farmer who knows how to use baling wire and duct tape to fix something, and turn that into new jobs and new opportunities and solutions that we need going forward, whether it's renewable energy or, you know, other big challenges that we're facing, we need to be thinking about what's Wisconsin in the 21st century. And as leaders, we need to be talking about that. We need to make it okay to innovate. We need to make it okay to take risks so that the young people of today who are facing, you know, their worlds being devastated say, oh, I still want to start my own company. I still want to take this crazy idea to market. We need to tell our entrepreneurs that innovation is success in the making, and that we support them and we're behind them in doing that. And we need to be saying that stuff out loud. We need to create this culture of innovation that Pindell was able to do, and many other manufacturers. I want to harness that energy and use that to get us out of this mess.
You want state government to do more for these startups?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you don't, if state government isn't supporting innovation, if state government is saying we're fine just the way they are, just the way we are, we don't need to change, then people don't have that urge and that support to feel like I'm going to do something different, I'm going to make change. If the state government is saying we all need to be working together for a future together, that gives everybody a sense of, okay, we're doing this together. I feel supported in going to market, or I feel supported in thinking about an innovative idea.
Okay, let's move on. A lot of the economic damage from COVID to some major industries like bars and restaurants and the UW system and agriculture and tourism have been well documented, you know, by news stories and think tanks. But there is a point you make in this report that I want to cite, and I want to use another graphic here. You warn that the pandemic could worsen racial disparities and inequities. And I want to quote from the report. The pandemic threatens to worsen Wisconsin's, quote, crisis of racial disparity and inequity. Minorities nationally are overrepresented in industries vulnerable to pandemic-related closure, comprising 62% of employees in the personal care sector, 63% in dry cleaning and laundry workers, and 59% of hospitality employees. You say that unless we get this right, this is going to worsen the gap between Wisconsin haves and minority have-nots. Why is that a major point of your report, Wisconsin Tomorrow?
Well, what COVID-19 has really done for us is to clear the mist on some of our real weaknesses. And, you know, although going into this, we had an incredibly strong economy, you know, we had low unemployment, we had a growing GDP, we also have seen how critical it is to have access to childcare and good health care to have a healthy economy. And communities of color have been particularly impacted by COVID, you know, not only in their health, but in the economy, in their businesses, and they had no safety net in a lot of instances. What I've learned in this process is a term called unbanked. And those are businesses that are running without a bank account. You know, coming from, you know, my heritage at Organic Valley, I don't even understand that. How do you do that? But that's how businesses are operating, or something that's called underbanked. So they have a bank account, but they don't have a line of credit. they don't have a relationship with the banker where they can go in and say, you know, Joe, I really, you know, I need a little help here because it's been, you know, I haven't had any orders for the last 2 weeks. It's just they have no orders and their business evaporates. And these businesses are incredibly important for the fabric of our communities. And the best way I can describe it is, you know, if you're driving on the highway into Milwaukee and there are all these little white vans that are driving by you, those are all businesses, right? Those are all businesses on wheels. They're probably unbanked. They're working on a cash basis. And they have been super vulnerable and impacted by this whole episode. And so it's a learning experience for us, Steve. And it's clearing the myth that we can understand that there is this whole community that's been left behind in Wisconsin's strong economy. And if we continue to have that weakness in the system, our overall economy is going to continue to be weak and not as resilient as we need it to be.
Page 40 of the report says, the pandemic, quote, has flipping childcare, Wisconsin's child care markets on its head. Is this a reference to the fact that I think I might have the number wrong, but 54% of our large licensed daycares closed and only 18% of the family closed, family daycare centers closed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just the nature of you feeling more comfortable taking your child to a smaller atmosphere where you know who's coming in and out rather than a large childcare facility where you you know, you don't know what your child's being exposed to or the teachers are being exposed to and the need to shut that down. But what's really important to recognize is, you know, we've all seen now how hard it is to work and have your children underfoot at the same time. And not having access to childcare, all of a sudden is like, oh, we really need that for a healthy economy.
Well, the WEDC report uses the term retrain and upskill. Seems to me that the higher institutions most capable of, go back to the phrase, retrain and upskill, as our tech college systems. Now, your report pays a great deal of attention to the tech college systems, and Morna Foy also made the point that she wants more of the minorities to have access and be supported. There's a quote in there, I forgot the page number, where the Morna Foy, Dr. Foy, president of the tech college system, says we're at the point of no return. Okay, I could ask Morna, but what did that term mean to you?
Well, you know, Morna goes on to articulate what she's saying. And I think it's important for folks to look at that because, you know, she's incredible as the leader of the tech college system, which is a unique system that we have in Wisconsin, that we birthed here in Wisconsin and we've developed and grown. You know, the way I take it is we're not going back. We're not going back to normal. You know, lots of folks have said I just want to go back to normal. Well, the reality is normal is gone. And so we have a new normal or we have what we want to create. Let's not just fall into it. And let's take that, you know, the fact that the door behind us has closed and we're going forward. Let's make sure as we go forward, as Morna says, that everyone has access to our great tech college system. And we have the opportunity to use that network and that system that we've built to launch us forward.
Well, and is that the reason that that you recommend in the report do not cut funding to both the UW system and the tech college system, correct?
It's really hard in this moment to not, you know, cut. And what we need to be thinking about is where have we invested in the past so that we can use those strengths and move them going forward. So when you've been sick, you don't stop taking care of your legs. You try to recover your arms. So let's take care of our strong legs. Let's try and recover our arms as we go forward. And so not cutting and maybe even investing is a bold way of thinking, right? Like, how do we need to invest in our future in a time when you have no resources? What are the resources that we can find laying around on the ground? Let's pick those up and use them and not just necessarily say, okay, we have to cut here. We have to cut here. Now, look, like I said before, we have a real challenge with our state revenue, and we're going to be having a conversation about what to cut. But let's do it in a thoughtful way, and let's do it in a way where we're all talking together and thinking about it rather than, you know, just sparring in the media.
I understand. Your industry by industry summary of the damage done by COVID-19. As I said, many of these industries have been covered by news stories and think tanks, including healthcare. The one that got my attention, though, is the forest and logging industry. And I want to talk, I want to show a graphic on that, because you say forest products have had perhaps the starkest divide. And that means that we have some paper products, paper making companies who are making toilet paper 24/7. And that's the good news. It's been good news for them. But you also add, if Verso Corporation's Wisconsin Rapids mill does not restart, this would equate to approximately 625,000 cords of pulpwood, market capacity lost for loggers. 25% of all pulpwood processed at Wisconsin mills. My takeaway is that perhaps the most at-risk segment of our economy is forest and logging. Is that unfair, Missy?
I think for what we know right now on June 30th, that is probably our most vulnerable at this time, because it is so vertically integrated within Wisconsin. The logs are coming from our forests and they're moving through our paper mills, and our employees, you know, 900 employees in Wisconsin Rapids are dependent on that plant. And because we see this stark divide, we see, you know, some paper companies and some work, you know, storming, like you mentioned. And then for someone like Verso, who is more in magazines and retail catalogs the result of advertising, which has gone down on paper, the move to digital, that's really where we're seeing that impact on the forest products industry. So we've got a real divide there, and we need to be thinking about, that goes to this conversation about innovation. What can we do to innovate? What do we need to be thinking about in the paper industry in the future that we can support as a state, so that we have that whole, logging all the way through to those employees taken care of?
Okay. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left. Where does this report go from here? There are a couple of major news organizations ignored it, and that's not my, so what? That's the reason we're doing this interview. But where does it go from here? I mean, do you expect to testify before a legislative committee? Because the ledge and the governor asked you for this report. It's not going to gather just, I hope it's not just going to gather dust somewhere, right?
Yeah, I think it would be a shame if it did gather dust. I don't think it's going to. And the reason it'd be a shame is, as we entered into writing this report, I was particularly motivated to make sure we had lots of stakeholder input. This report was about 7 industries and the people of Wisconsin, and we gave them the opportunity for their voice to be heard, whether it's a small business in Green Bay or one of our major corporations. We talked to literally thousands of people and took advantage of conversations we've had over the course of the last 4 months to inform the report. So those folks who contributed are going to be, not heard if we don't talk about this report and use it as a starting off point. That said, you know, everybody is, I have found, really focused on the day-to-day conversation. How many cases? How many deaths? What are our ICU units at? And should we wear a mask or not? So getting a longer-term conversation about the economy is going to come. And we can use what we've learned so far to continue the conversation, to start working on that. I think as leaders, it's incumbent on us to look ahead from the day to day and think about what's coming in the fall, the winter, the spring. You know, what are we looking at for the course of the next 2 or 3 years as we recover from this? And this is the starting point. I have every confidence that we will continue to talk about it, that the legislators will take it up. I know the governor has read it. And, you know, we'll continue to have conversations.
Well, are you talking about the period after the election? Because we're not only busy counting negatives and positive COVID tests, but there's elections both state and national. So do you really think there'll be some serious consideration of this and the changes that it calls for after the November 3 election?
We have to fix broadband now. We have school starting in 2 months, so it is not my intention that this waits for an election. There's always an election. There's always something. But I think as leaders, we have a responsibility to serve the people of Wisconsin and make sure that we overcome things like elections and we try to work through differences and we try to have conversations. I know it sounds idealistic and overly optimistic to say that, but that's what I feel is my role, especially coming from kind of an apolitical economic side of things. We gotta figure out how to talk to each other. We gotta figure out how to work on this and solve these problems that are coming at us.
I have to ask this question. What's at stake if we don't get it right over the next 6, 12, 18 months, Missy?
I think that we're already seeing fatigue, and I think we will see a longer term recovery. I think, you know, what could take 2 or 3 years will take 6 or 7 years. And, you know, we'll be looking back and saying, you know, if we had jumped on this, if we had been more thoughtful, we could have put in place some economic engines that would help us move forward. And it's a shame we didn't do that. So I think it's really, you know, it's a long-term slog versus a faster launching for Wisconsin's economy.
And then finally, viewers who've heard us talk about this report, where can they find this?
You can find it at our website at wedc.org. There is an executive summary that's just a few pages, or there's the whole 155-page report. And, you know, I invite everybody to take a minute and look at it. I really wrote it with the taxpayers and the citizens of Wisconsin in mind. That's who I work for. And although the legislature asked for it, I wanted everyone to be able to see themselves in this report. Because, like I said at the beginning, this has impacted everybody in Wisconsin. Everybody's got skin in this game.
Yep. I think it's a very important document. I hope people do go to your website and find it. Missy Hughes, CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, whose agency just wrote Wisconsin Tomorrow, an Economy for All. Missy, thanks so much for talking about what is really a very important document. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.